All right, so get ready, because today we're diving deep into the world of tissue cell culture.
Sound exciting.
It is, actually.
Yeah.
We're talking about growing cells outside their original organism. It's like creating mini versions of organs and tissues in a lab.
It's amazing what scientists can do these days.
Yeah, and you might be thinking, okay, cool, but so what? Well, hold on, because this stuff has huge implications. Think personalized organ transplants, testing new medicines without using animals, even understanding diseases like Alzheimer's at a cellular level.
It's become a fundamental technique in so much of modern research, giving scientists this incredibly controlled way to study cells and figure out how they behave.
Right. And speaking of control, we've got this super detailed standard operating procedure, an SOP for tissue cell culture to guide us. It's like a super specific recipe book, but for scientists working with cells.
Yeah, every step is laid out in detail.
And one thing that really jumped out at me was the emphasis on cleanliness, like an almost obsessive level of it. The SOP talks about wiping down every single surface with ethanol, even being careful not to set down bottle caps. Are scientists really that worried about a little dust?
Well, think of it this way. Contamination is a constant threat in tissue cell culture. Even the tiniest speck of bacteria or fungi can totally ruin an experiment, meaning months of work and resources wasted.
So you're saying one stray pipette tip brushing against the bench could really mess everything up?
Absolutely. It just shows how fragile these cultures are. Sterile technique, even though it seems super meticulous, is key to making sure the experiments are reliable.
Okay. So a pristine environment is non-negotiable.
Mm.
But once you have that, you can actually start growing the cells, right? Yeah. The SOP talks about two main ways. Adherent and suspension, what's the difference?
Adherent cells, they like to settle down, attach to surfaces, and grow in these flat layers, almost like tiles.
I see, so they're the homebodies.
Exactly. While suspension cells, those are the free spirits. They're happy just floating around in the liquid media.
Ah, so like those U2OS cells mentioned in the SOP, the ones from human bone cancer, they'd be the stay-at-home types.
Exactly. U2OS cells are adherent, and they're also what we call immortalized, meaning they can divide indefinitely. Super valuable for research because scientists have a constant supply.
Immortal cells, wow. That's pretty wild. And then you've got these spheroids. The SOP describes them as 3D clusters of cells growing in suspension, almost like they're building their own little cities.
And they are complex and dynamic, just like cities. What's even more fascinating is that scientists are growing these spheroids into organoids, basically miniature organs, brains, livers, even hearts.
Mini organs in a dish. That sounds straight out of science fiction.
It might sound like it, but it's becoming reality. The ability to grow and study these organoids is changing the way we understand human biology, opening up amazing new possibilities for things like personalized medicine and drug discovery.
Okay, now that's where things get really interesting. I mean, we're talking about growing mini organs. Wow. Now, going back to the SOP, there was this term that kept popping up, confluency. I have to admit, I had no idea what it meant. It sounds more like a traffic report than something you'd find in a lab.
Think of it this way. Confluency is basically how densely packed the cells are in their growth environment. Imagine a field of flowers, right? They're spaced out, they have room to grow, pack them too tight, and they start competing for resources and might not do so well.
Okay, that makes sense. So scientists have to make sure their cells have enough space to be happy and healthy. But how do they know when they're getting too crowded or too sparse?
Scientists are constantly monitoring their cell cultures, using microscopes to check for signs of overcrowding or insufficient growth. Maintaining the right cell density or confluency is super important for making sure the cells are behaving normally.
It's like those scientists are walking this tightrope, constantly trying to create that Goldilocks scenario for their cells not too crowded, not too sparse.
That's a great way to put it. Creating the perfect environment for cells to grow is one of the most important parts of tissue cell culture.
And sometimes things go wrong, even with the best intentions, right?
Sure.
We talked about contamination earlier, but the SOP had a whole section on the warning signs. Tiny things wiggling under a microscope. That's how you know you've got a problem, yeah?
Yeah, unfortunately. Contamination is a huge setback in tissue cell culture. It can ruin whole experiments, force researchers to start from scratch. Those little wigglers you mentioned are usually bacteria or fungi that have sneaked into the culture, and they can quickly take over.
So all that meticulous cleaning and sterile technique, that's the frontline defense against these microscopic invaders.
Exactly. Keeping everything sterile is essential in tissue cell culture. You need constant vigilance and real attention to detail.
All right, so let's say you've managed to keep the contaminants out and your cells are happily multiplying in their little petri dish paradise.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
Well, as the cells divide and their numbers increase, they'll eventually need more space and nutrients. That's when scientists passage the cells, basically transferring some of them to a new container with fresh media.
So kind of like repotting a plant that's outgrown its pot. You give it more room and fresh food so it can keep thriving.
Exactly. And timing is key. Just like with plants, if you wait too long, the cells can become overcrowded, stressed, and that can affect their behavior.
And I noticed this whole numbering system for passages in the SOP. It's like scientists are keeping tabs on their cells' family tree.
That's a good way to think about it. Each time cells are passaged, they get a new number. This helps researchers track how many times they've been split and provides valuable information about their history.
Okay, makes sense. But here's what really blew my mind. You can actually freeze cells and bring them back to life later. It's like hitting the pause button on life. How is that even possible?
It's called cryopreservation. It's a game changer in research. Scientists carefully freeze the cells at specific temperatures using special solutions. This basically pauses their biological clocks, preserving them for months, even years. When needed, the frozen cells can be thawed and brought back to life, ready to divide and participate in experiments.
That's just incredible. It's like a cellular time capsule. But I bet there's a lot of precision involved in this process. You can't just toss them in the freezer and hope for the best, right?
Definitely not. Cryopreservation needs careful preparation and following specific protocols. The SOP lays out the steps, including using a special solution, a cryoprotectant, to prevent damage during freezing. The freezing rate also has to be controlled so the cells survive the process.
So it's a lot more complicated than just sticking them in an ice cube tray.
Absolutely. Cryopreservation is a powerful technique, but it takes a deep understanding of how cells work and meticulous attention to detail.
Makes sense. So we've got sterile technique down, different ways to grow cells, even freezing them. But it seems like it's not just about having enough cells. It's about having enough healthy cells, right? The SOP mentioned something called a live-dead cell count.
You got it. It's like taking a census of your cells. Scientists need to know how many cells are alive and well to make sure they have enough for their experiments and to know how healthy the culture is overall.
So it's not just quantity, it's quality too. You need a thriving population to get reliable results.
Exactly. The live-dead cell count helps researchers make decisions about when to passage, when to run experiments, or even when to discard a culture if it's not healthy enough.
Okay, last thing, the SOP we're focusing on is all about U2OS cells. And these cells are kind of special because they express this protein called GFP, or green fluorescent protein. So great about a protein that glows green.
GFP is a revolutionary tool for cell biologists. It lets scientists actually see cells and their components under a microscope. By attaching GFP to specific proteins, researchers can track their movements, study their interactions. It provides incredible insight into how cells work.
So it's like giving the cells little glow sticks so we can follow them around.
Exactly. GFP has revolutionized our ability to study cellular processes and has led to so many breakthroughs in our understanding of human biology.
Amazing. All right, so let's quickly recap. We've seen how scientists maintain a super clean environment, how they grow cells in different ways, and how they can freeze and revive them later. And we talked about the importance of having healthy cells and this incredible tool, GFP, that lets scientists see what's going on at a cellular level.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in.
It is, but it's clear that tissue cell culture is a powerful technique with huge potential. And we've only just scratched the surface. There's so much more to unpack here. We've just started our deep dive into the world of tissue cell culture, so stay with us as we explore even more fascinating aspects of this groundbreaking field.
You know, it's amazing to think that every experiment, every discovery in tissue cell culture, it all starts with something so simple, thawing a vial of frozen cells.
It's true. The SOP we're looking at today actually takes us through a specific experiment using those U2OS cells step by step from frozen cells to a thriving culture.
And what struck me was a level of detail, how precise everything needs to be. It's like a balance of art and science.
Oh, absolutely. Like that thing about only starting the experiment on a Tuesday. What's that about? Is that some kind of science superstition?
Not exactly. It's all about timing. Cells have their own internal clocks, so researchers need to sync up the experiments with those rhythms to make sure things go smoothly. Starting on a Tuesday might just be the best way to ensure the cells are at the right stage for later procedures.
So it's like a perfectly choreographed dance, but with cells.
Exactly. Tissue cell culture is all about picking up on those cues, responding to what the cells need every step of the way.
Another thing that caught my eye was the warning about over-pipetting. Apparently, too much pipetting can stress out the cells, even kill them. That seems counterintuitive. I mean, wouldn't you want to be extra careful and transfer every single cell?
It's a common mistake to think that while it's important to transfer efficiently, too much pipetting can damage those delicate cell membranes.
Yeah.
It's like being tossed around in rough water too much and it's game over.
So it's all about finding that sweet spot, handling the cells gently. They're pretty vulnerable outside their natural environment.
Exactly. Tissue cell culture needs a delicate touch and a deep understanding of what the cells need.
All right, so you've thawed your U2OS cells. You're ready to give them a new home. The SOP mentions a special flask, a ventilated one. Why is ventilation so important? Do they get stuffy in there?
Just like we need oxygen to breathe, cells need it too. A ventilated flask makes sure there's proper gas exchange so the cells have all the oxygen they need.
Keeping those little cellular lungs happy.
That's the idea. And to keep them even happier, the SOP also talks about a specific type of media. It's like a nutrient-rich broth designed for these U2OS cells.
It's like scientists are running a five-star restaurant for these tiny, demanding guests.
That's a great way to think about it. Creating the right environment is everything.
Yeah.
But even then, things don't always go as planned.
Oh, right. The SOP is that whole troubleshooting section. What are some of the common problems that can pop up?
Well, even with a detailed guide, there's always room for human error, like accidentally using the wrong type of media.
Like trying to feed a steak to a rabbit, it's just not going to work.
Exactly. Then there are equipment issues like the incubator running out of CO2.
Wait, cells need CO2? I thought that was like a waste product.
It is for us, but cells use it to regulate their environment. It's like making sure a pool isn't too acidic or too basic. You need that perfect balance.
Okay, so stable and balanced environment is key.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you've avoided all the pitfalls. Your cells are doing great. What's next?
As those cells divide, they'll eventually need more room. That's when scientists passage them, basically splitting the cells and giving them a new flask with fresh media.
Like when you repot a plant that's outgrown its pot, you give it more space to grow.
That's it. And passaging doesn't just give them more space, it also keeps the culture healthy and actively growing.
The SOP goes into a lot of detail about passaging, washing the cells with a special solution, using an enzyme to detach them. Sounds pretty complex.
It does take a certain level of precision. The goal is to detach the cells without hurting them and transfer them to their new home. It's like moving a colony of ants carefully without squishing anyone.
And before you move them, you got to know how many you're dealing with. The SOP mentions using a special tool to count the cells.
Yep. Counting cells is super important in tissue cell culture. It lets researchers make sure they're transferring the right amount to the new flask and keep that optimal density we talked about.
Back to that Goldilocks principle. Not too crowded, not too sparse. But I imagine counting thousands of tiny cells under a microscope would be pretty tedious.
Luckily, technology's come a long way. Modern cell counters can count millions of cells super fast and accurately. Saves a lot of time and effort.
It's amazing how tech is changing even the most basic parts of science.
It really is. From those high-tech incubators that keep the temperature and humidity just right to those automated cell counters and powerful microscopes, technology is always pushing what's possible in tissue cell culture.
So we've covered passaging. But the SOP goes even further. It includes instructions for imaging the cells using bright field and fluorescent microscopy. Why are those imaging techniques so important?
Imaging lets researchers actually see the cells, what they look like, how they behave. It's like taking a snapshot of their world and seeing how they grow, divide, interact, respond to different things.
So it's about understanding how they function, what they look like, how they move, how they talk to each other.
Exactly. And those U2OS cells we've been talking about, the ones that express GFP, that's where fluorescent microscopy really shines.
Right, because those cells have that built-in glow stick. Researchers can actually see specific parts of the cell light up.
Precisely, fluorescent microscopy lets researchers see specific proteins and structures within the cell. It gives incredible insight into their organization and their dynamic processes.
It's like having X-ray vision for cells.
That's a great way to put it. And the SOP even shows an example of what a fluorescent image should look like, with the mitochondria of the U2OS cells glowing bright green. It's a reminder of just how powerful this technique is and how beautiful the cellular world is.
It really shows how art and science are intertwined. It's not just data and numbers. It's about capturing these amazing images that show us the complexity of life.
It's true. And it highlights how important it is for scientists and artists to work together. Sometimes you need that artistic eye to really appreciate and communicate the wonder of scientific discoveries.
I'm definitely feeling that sense of wonder after going through this SOP. We've gone from thawing those frozen cells to nurturing them, passaging them and even capturing their essence under a microscope.
And we've only scratched the surface. Tissue cell culture is changing research in so many fields, from medicine to materials science.
This deep dive has been amazing. But before we wrap up, we need to talk about the ethical side of all this. The idea of growing mini organs and manipulating life at such a fundamental level. We'll be back to discuss that after a short break. Welcome back. It's amazing how much control we have over cells these days. We can grow them in different ways, freeze them, bring them back to life, and even make them glow under a microscope.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible how far this field has come. And as you mentioned, this level of control, it brings up some big questions.
Yeah, definitely. We've been looking at this SOP. It's like a recipe for growing cells. But the implications go way beyond the lab. Scientists can grow mini organs like mini brains. It really makes you think about the future of medicine and the ethical side of things.
It's a really important point. The more we learn about cells, the more powerful tools we have to manipulate them. We have to think about the potential consequences.
Right. It's like we're unlocking these secrets of life. But with that comes a responsibility to use it wisely.
Absolutely. One of the things that struck me about this SOP was the emphasis on record keeping. Every step of the process is documented. The media, the passage number of the cells, all of it. It's all about making sure things are reproducible and that scientists can build on each other's work.
It's like creating a map for others to follow, making sure scientific discoveries are built on solid ground.
Exactly. And this careful approach is even more important as we move into more complex stuff like growing organoids or using CRISPR to edit genes.
CRISPR, yeah, I remember reading about scientists using it to fix genetic problems in cells grown in culture. It's pretty wild to think we might be able to cure diseases at the cellular level.
It's a fast-moving field with a lot of potential, but like any powerful technology, we have to think about the ethical implications.
We can't just rush ahead without considering the consequences, both good and bad.
Right, and that's why these conversations are so important, not just between scientists, but also ethicists, policymakers, the public. Everyone needs to be part of the discussion about how to use these tools responsibly.
It reminds us that science is not just facts and discoveries. It's about values and choices, too.
Absolutely. And the choices we make now about how we use these technologies, they'll have a huge impact on the future of medicine, healthcare, even society as a whole.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into tissue cell culture, any key takeaways you want to leave our listeners with?
I think it's crucial to recognize the power and potential of this technology. It's already led to so many breakthroughs in how we understand human biology and disease, and it holds incredible promise for the development of new treatments.
It's amazing to think that something as simple as growing cells in a dish can have such a huge impact on human health.
Definitely. And with this power comes responsibility. We need to think about the ethics of manipulating life at the cellular level and have those important discussions about how to use these technologies the right way.
Ultimately, it's about using this knowledge to improve lives and create a better future.
Exactly. And I would just encourage everyone to stay curious and engaged with this field. Tissue cell culture is always changing, and the discoveries happening right now, they're going to shape the world of tomorrow.
It's a field full of wonder and potential. We can't wait to see what the future holds. So until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.